this is Denise Lee Yan, and welcome to the Brand as Business Bites podcast. The Brand as Business Bites podcast features great stuff for your brain to chew on, including insights and interviews with newsmakers, brand builders, and thought leaders. It's available on iTunes and on my website, DeniseLeeYan.com.
No one likes to think about the organization experiencing a crisis, but in this day and age, it's pretty likely at some point something significant will go wrong at your organization, and you'll be struggling with how to manage the problem. But if you read Dennis DeFoya's book, Organizations in the Face of Crisis, Managing the Brand and Stakeholders, you will have a much better chance of not only surviving the crisis, but coming out of it as a better organization. I've asked Dennis to join me today to tell us about some of the key concepts in his book. Dennis is the president of ComSight, Inc., a research and development firm whose research focus explores factors that affect performance at individual, group, and organizational levels. So welcome, Dennis.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Denise. I appreciate your interest in my book.
Yeah, so I definitely want to get into your book, and there are actually two main points in this book, Organizations in the Face of Crisis, that I'd like to focus on for our conversation. They are, number one, stakeholder swarm, and number two, brand trauma. So let's first talk about stakeholder swarm. What is it, and how does it affect organizations that are experiencing a crisis?
Right. Well, as you know, an organization is comprised of a network of different stakeholders, typically employees, management teams, customers, suppliers, competitors. When a storm, when a crisis occurs, a stakeholder swarm is a condition that emerges in response to that crisis or event. When a crisis occurs, the organization can find its network engulfed with a number of new stakeholders, stakeholders drawn to the organization because of the crisis. These can include litigators, injured parties, regulators, law enforcement, and the media. They have their own agenda, and they can stifle the organization's capacity to function as they demand information, define new rules for operation, sometimes even shut down parts of the organization, and in the extreme, even arrest or detain members of that organization. So that's the swarm part.
Mm-hmm. Well, and swarm, I guess, is, you know, kind of, the natural activity of animals, or I kind of think of pests, you know, like bees or something. So there's kind of a, there's a sense of a lot of activity and maybe at a frenetic pace in a way in this word swarm, right?
Without a doubt. As a matter of fact, that's how I came up with the idea. I was reading some material in biology about the way, for example, bees and ants will swarm towards a food source. What happened, though, is that when you start dealing with individuals and human organizations, they differ because those stakeholders that swarm to that organization are, in effect, always around. The media is always around. Litigators are always around. But you don't see them because they haven't got a reason to actually gravitate towards that firm until it finds itself in a crisis. And then their need sets drive them to the organization.
So what about brand trauma? You in your book, you say brand trauma reflects the multidimensional features, products, outcomes, and impacts the organization, its brand, and stakeholders can experience when an organization is under attack or stressed by a crisis. That sounds pretty dramatic. So explain why the word trauma is appropriate here, and then maybe what are some of the causes of brand trauma?
Sure. Well, I think it's appropriate, and I came across this notion because as I was exploring the impact of a crisis on an organization, one of the things I saw is that we could see physical trauma, psychological trauma, emotional trauma, but all the work that has been done on organizations in crisis prior to this skipped a lot of attention to this whole notion of what actually happens to the brand. So when you think about a crisis, immediately say to yourself, what's going on with that organization's brand? Brand trauma is a condition that an organization and its or its stakeholders' experience when a crisis occurs. Once a crisis occurs, the stakeholders form their own impressions of the issue at hand, the organization, its leadership, and its products, virtually everything that defines the brand. So prior to the crisis, it was the organization's leadership that was defining what the brand is or should be. But in the end, when the crisis occurs, that control shifts to those stakeholders who are now saying, what does this really mean to me? So if you think of a politician, religious leaders who have been caught in a crisis, oil companies, for example, that might have been involved with a spill, their brand is what's on the line when that crisis emerges. And we can measure brand trauma in a variety of ways. The loss of influence, credibility, esteem. Sometimes they lose their privileges. All of these things can affect sales, market share, or even loyalties to the brand or the organization itself. But one thing I find is most interesting about brand trauma is it can be viewed on one hand as a threat or a tool. It's a threat if the organization is finding itself destabilized because of the nature of the crisis. On the other hand, some individuals or some stakeholders actually see this as a device that they can use to their own advantage, perhaps to discredit the opponent, undermine an organization's operations, cause clients to question the credibility, for example, of a politician. In this way, brand trauma is used as a tool for one's benefit.
Well, and I guess it could also be used as a tool by the organization leaders to move the organization into a better place post-crisis, right? You know, there's that quote about, you know, never miss an opportunity to make the best of a crisis or something like that, right? So there is the possibility that it could be used as a tool by the leaders themselves to affect a positive outcome down the road.
Well, without a doubt, that can happen. But the leadership has to be especially astute, has to be clearly competent, and has to realize that there's a lot of potential for trouble to occur if this isn't handled correctly. I mean, if we take what the Tylenol example that occurred in the 80s, so here was an example of somebody actually managing that crisis as it occurred. What's interesting now, too, is if you look at the impact of that crisis, every time you go to a store and buy anything from some kind of medicine, a soda, anything that's in a packaged product, you see these layers of protective devices for the consumer. All of that came about as a result of that Tylenol scare that occurred in the 80s. That's a positive way of handling it. But again, the management team has to be very careful, because sometimes a lot of things they did contributed to the cause of the crisis occurring and the subsequent trauma. So many times, you know, that's why they need to pull in people from outside the firm to help them manage the situation.
Yeah, for sure. Now, one thing that I really liked about your book, again, Organizations in the Face of Crisis, was that it had all sorts of helpful, like, organizing frameworks and strategies, and then it also included the crisis management plan. But you were, in your book, you really focused on kind of the unique perspective on the plan that you have. So I was wondering if you could maybe just briefly describe what some of that unique perspective is.
Well, fine. I always like to begin with the fact that when a crisis occurs, it's critically important that we are addressing the real crisis and the real causes of the crisis. I mean, sometimes it appears that, so if you take take any given crisis that you see in the papers today, whether take a look, for example, at what's going on in Baltimore right now with the police department. The police can back up and say, well, it was because of this particular incident. But in fact, if they sit back and say, what's the real problem, it might have to do with the way police officers are being trained. It might have to do with the follow-up training that they might receive. It might have to do with the kinds of weaponry that they use. There's a whole array. It might be due, in fact, because of the way the society or the culture exists around that particular situation. So first, you have to begin with looking at the real problem. And secondly, the management team, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, needs to recognize and be honest with itself regarding its own competencies or capabilities for managing the crisis. Managing a crisis is different than managing the firm on a day-to-day basis. A crisis brings in all kinds of new players. A crisis puts on all kinds of pressures on the firm, on its resources, its people resources, its monetary resources. So sometimes the management team has to literally back away from the management of the crisis on a day-to-day basis and bring in teams of people who can better handle that situation. It's like when a fire occurs. You know, the people who run the organization don't try and necessarily put the fire out themselves. They bring in the fire department because those are the most competent professionals in handling that kind of situation. So the management team, again, has to sometimes back up and let somebody else handle the situation or certainly be involved. They also then have to build a plan for handling this crisis. And the plan has to focus on, in my estimation, three things. Factors causing the crisis, they have to keep the doors of their operation, their organization, open, and they have to take steps to reduce the likelihood that this crisis won't happen again, or if it does, they're better prepared for it. If they do these three things, it also does the same. In addition to helping manage the crisis, it also goes a long way towards managing the brand trauma that the organization is experiencing. When a crisis occurs, the people who are the stakeholders in that organization, whether they're regulators, litigators, customers, whatever, always want to sit back and say, how is the world going to be different for this organization once they claim the crisis is over? How will they really be different, and how will they treat us and meet our needs differently? And then finally, while we're not here to talk about your book necessarily, as I said once before, when I looked at your book, the seven brand-building principles are great elements that people can cover when they're in a recovery process. For example, you say great brands reflect a clearly defined culture. Well, when a crisis occurs, the firm has to back up and re-examine its culture. What led to the crisis? How is it going to be after the crisis? Again, it's that same, that first point of yours. And another notion you said is that they should avoid selling products rather than create an environment, and rather create an environment that pulls customers to the org. This means that they have to re-examine their customer needs, wants, and desires. Their stakeholders are going to have a whole set of different needs once that crisis breaks, and I think it's important for the organization to sit back and realize that. Anticipation is proactive. Waiting for direction is reactive. So looking at how they manage even the routine events, 90% of an organization's activities are defined in terms of routine events. So if they screw those up, they're really in trouble. If a fast food company has a rude employee, that's their face to the customer. And in that case, at that point, the crisis is there. They can't mess up the routine events. If you look at most organizations' crises, they're stumbling on routine events, not the extreme event. So they really do need to sweat the small stuff to deal with that. So, yes, in fact, those are the primary things that I tend to look at. But I did, like I said, I found the contents of your book interface nicely with my own thinking on crisis management.
Cool. Yeah, and I really, you know, enjoyed or I learned a lot going through your book. And I think that, you know, maybe a good way to talk about the relationship between our two books is, you know, people like to think about, like, brand building is very kind of positive and constructive and, you know, very, and approach brand building very optimistically. But I think that, you know, understanding, as I said in the beginning, that it's pretty likely at some point your organization will experience an event that causes a crisis. You know, having your book, Organizations in the Face of Crisis, having read that in advance actually will help them, you know, build their brand even through this process of the crisis. So that's really kind of how I see our two books syncing up. And so I want to end by asking you to please tell my listeners how they can learn more about you and your book.
All right. Well, I'll start by saying first, the nature of the book and the research that I do in these books, and this is that's about four now, what I really try and do is really dive into some theoretical issues from a practical point of view, an organizational or a business point of view, so that it really enriches the reader's thinking. That makes it more strategic than tactical sometimes, but that's what I think is necessary. I can be reached by somebody can call me directly. My personal number is 215-620-0927, or they can send me an email via my company, dennis@compsite.com. And the book is available through all the major bookstores are willing to order it. Amazon, of course, has it. They're both, all of them, well, these last two have been published by Macmillan, so they're available through the publishing house as well.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I do recommend that folks check out your book, and Dennis, I want to thank you for providing such an informative conversation and a great read. Thanks again.
Well, thank you, Denise. I appreciate your time.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening to the Brand as Business Bites podcast. Be sure to subscribe to it on iTunes or through my website, DeniseLeeYon.com. And check out my new best-selling book, What Great Brands Do, the 7 brand-building principles that separate the best from the rest. Go to WhatGreatBrandsDo.com. And remember, good is the enemy of great. Greatness is a choice. Choose to be great.